Welcome to The Wonder, exploring perspectives, rituals, and observances of modern, naturalistic, earth-revering, pagan religious paths. Here are your hosts, Yucca and Mark.
Welcome back to The Wonder. I'm your host, Yucca.
And I'm Mark.
And this week, we are talking about climate grief and grief over the many huge systemic challenges that we're facing today and how we deal with that, both on an emotional and spiritual level, and also on a practical, tangible level as well.
Right, exactly. This topic was suggested in the Atheopaganism Facebook group. And it's actually been suggested in a number of directions because we're all living with large, heavy issues that confront humanity and that confront our societies. And we need to grapple with those. We need to find a way to survive them without either ignoring them or wallowing in them.
Yeah. And I think it's important both from just the personal sanity but also from the perspective of how effective we can be in change. So when we're in a better place with that, with our relationship with it, that we're able to do more to help those things.
Yes, exactly. In my history, most of my professional career has been in various kinds of environmental advocacy and activism. And it can be very difficult on a daily basis to go to go into the trenches again and again and again and again on behalf of a biosphere that is so fragile and so threatened and has so much arrayed against it at this time. And yet we must. Mm-hmm. We must do these things. It's crucial, not only for our survival, but for our sanity, as you say.
Yeah. And it's...
So... Well, what we thought we would start with is simply by naming the problem, right? These issues are real. Climate change is real. The impacts of climate change are accelerating all around us. And the other large systemic issues that we confront, like institutional racism, systemic racism, police violence against people of color, misogyny and sexism, homophobia, transphobia, these issues are very real. Mm-hmm. And they are large, and they are issues that any one individual cannot possibly solve. And when all of that kind of falls on you as an aware person, it's very easy to feel dispirited and despairing and paralyzed and unable to act. And so that's what our program is about today, is to talk about how we live in the presence of this knowledge, and also how we work with that in order to be as happy and as effective as we can be despite this knowledge.
Exactly. So where should we start with that? That's a pretty big one.
It is. I mean, I'm certain that there are, and I know for a fact that there are other large systemic issues that I am forgetting right now, that I'm overlooking.
Income inequality.
Income inequality and class generally in the world, the growing divide between the obscenely wealthy and everyone else, the growing hegemony, despite its reducing popularity, of extremist religious philosophies and policies, certainly in the United States. I mean, we have very extreme Christian views now having currency in the highest levels of government. So it's a terrifying thing for people who are of a religious minority, as we are.
Yeah. Well, and just to note that those particular ones are a minority within their own religion as well. That yes. those particular do not reflect the majority of people within that religion, and certainly, at least from the outside, doesn't look like it reflects the teachings of their religion very much.
No, but that never stopped anybody from labeling themselves as part of a given religion.
That's true, yeah.
I could go off on so many tracks on that, and I'm just not going to.
Sorry, let's pull back to. I know
what yeah. We're like, Yucca, I know what we're like. So, to start with, we do need to sit with this knowledge and grieve. Mm-hmm. Putting it out of mind, or pretending that it's not as bad as it really is, or any of those sort of coping strategies are really not very effective, for one thing, because just forcing something below the surface means it's going to pop up when you don't expect it and eat your lunch. Mm-hmm. And so we must grieve. We must grieve for what is lost. We must grieve for the species that are lost. We must grieve for the ecosystems that are being torn, the fabric of which is being torn apart by the chaotic climatic conditions that are coming and are already here. And, you know, we're coming up to the Hallows season, the Samhain season, and this is a good time for experiencing that grief. Because this is the time of year, of course, when we grapple with the fact of our deaths and with mortality as a fact of life on Earth. And so just sitting with it and feeling the feelings, I think, is the first step. It's hard to do. And particularly in the activist community, I've seen a lot of examples of where people don't want to go there because they're afraid that the grief will just overwhelm them, because what they love is dying.
Yeah.
And it's heartbreaking. It is completely heartbreaking that the things that we listed earlier are happening in the world, and in some cases, like in the case of climate change, they appear to be snowballing, and we confront a future in which we will see likely more of the same, if not more so, in terms of extreme weather events, wildfires, flooding, hurricanes, so forth. So I invite the listeners just to take a moment and let all that in. Let it in. Listen to it. Be aware of it.
Yeah.
The beautiful creatures that are going away. The landscapes that are being utterly transformed. The oceans that are being stripped of fish.
And all those species we haven't even discovered.
Yes. and the people, generally the most vulnerable and the most poor, who become refugees because of these climatic events, who lose everything. They lose their homes, they lose their families, they lose their ability to feed themselves. They become wanderers in the world because wealthy nations arranged this for them.
So, naming and allowing ourselves to feel and coming back to that, because it isn't just something that we do once and then never have to do it again. But from there, there's a lot that we can begin to do to not erase, not pretend like it doesn't hurt, not pretend like it doesn't matter, but to I suppose come to still find some peace or comfort to then be able to step forward and continue to live. Because in all of this, this still, at least for much, life still continues. And as long as we're still here, even if our choices are small, they're part of the big picture.
Yes, yes. Grief is a process. And the end of that process is not that the grief goes away, because the sorrow is always there. When you lose someone you love, the pain of having lost them remains. It's not that the goal of processing grief is to make that pain be eliminated. Rather, it's to make it bearable. Mm-hmm. It's to make it something that we can then carry on having experienced. And the same thing is true in our grief over the senseless deaths, the senseless bigotry, the senseless destruction of the earth that we are a part of. And so, as we look at the grief process, acceptance, you know, when we think about grief in the context of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's phases of grieving, of death or of impending death, there are these different phases. There's depression and anger and bargaining, but it finally lands on acceptance. Okay, this is the truth. This is reality. I don't like it. It hurts me, but I accept it. And I think that for us as pagans, we have a couple of advantages in coming to grips with these issues, even though they strike so deeply at our core values, as people who believe in equality and people who believe in the sacredness of the earth. And those advantages are, first of all, we have a time of year that's designated for grieving, which means that, obviously any time you actually experience a death or a great loss in your life at any time of year, you go through those phases and that process at that time. But on these big questions, these giant issues, many of which are going to persist long after we're dead, at least we have a time of year every year when we can come back around and sit with this grief and process it some more and see how we can live with it better and how we can make our own effort to make it better, yeah, to make those conditions better in the world. So that's the first advantage that I think we have. And then the second is that we're ritualists, mm-hmm. which means that we monkey with our psychology, the process of developing experiences for ourselves that cause our emotional states to reprogram and our associations to reprogram. And the pagan movement has become very good at those techniques. We foster them in the development of our rituals rather than putting it off onto a clergy caste that does the rituals for us or something like that. We're co-creators of our own psychological experiences. Mm-hmm. And so I believe that there are things we can do ritually that will also help us to bear the grief that we have to live with.
Yeah. I'd love both of those, but want to come back to the season of it. So I think that's so powerful that we have a time that we give ourselves permission to really be present with that, and that it can be a theme, not just a one evening that you set aside, but a whole time period where you could be present with this. And sometimes there's an approach. We'll come back to talking about Halloween or Hollows or all of that, but that sometimes we approach it as just being our beloved dead, as in our direct ancestors that we share our specific DNA with, but I think that it's great to also consider our ancestors as not just those that we inherited our DNA from, but all those whose lives gave us ours. And even not, you know, your sibling who passed, or your child who passed, anyone. And it's a time period to be present with that. And I also think it's a great time to learn about the past that the earth was that isn't anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. that creates a context. Again, it doesn't mean that the loss of the species now is any less painful, but it does create a larger context for seeing that Earth has done this before. Yes. And this is part of what Earth does, and it really, really sucks to be now and to not have that comfort that our ancestors in the past, even when they died, they could still trust that the forests would always be there. That there would always be fish in the sea. There would, even when we were gone, everything else would be there, but we don't have that right now because Earth is, the biosphere is in a point of change, and we have the added level of the guilt associated with that because we have played a very, very strong role in that. But some of that learning, this is a perfect time, I think, for learning about, you know, what were these different eons? What were the different eras that we've been through? And thinking about where, when the spring comes, for where is it going next?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's very well said. Having the long view is something that I find quintessentially pagan. For one thing, it's very science-based. It's very it's very rooted in our genuine understanding of the nature of the universe and the world and how those arose and what eras and phases they've gone through. And it's also a gift in that it enables us to look at things in a broader context, knowing that even if humanity so completely screwed things up that, you know, if we detonated all of our nuclear weapons and everything just completely went to hell and humans were extinct because the world couldn't support animals of our size anymore, it wouldn't even put a dent in the blue-green algae in the ocean.
Yeah.
And there's still 5 billion years until the sun goes red giant. So there's actually time to evolve creatures like us again, the world being 4.5 billion years old.
Yeah.
There's a lot of time for a lot of things to happen. And so this is one of the things we can sit with as we confront the loss of what's happening now, is the idea that nature truly does bat last. And there are, evolution is happening even now. Evolution continues to happen. Adaptation continues to happen. It's true that we've done a lot of damage, but we can't do so much damage that nature cannot repair itself. Yeah. And if any silver lining to our understanding of the climate issue, that must certainly be it. I wanted to go back to talking about the season a little bit. You know, one of the things that attracted me to paganism in the first place, and Yucca and I are different in that you were raised as a pagan, but like most pagans, I discovered paganism actually in adulthood, in young adulthood. And one of the things that was very attractive about it to me is that it seemed very mentally healthy. And I think that having this grief season is a very healthy thing. To have a time of year to come to grips with darkness and loss. To have a time of year to come to grips with the joys and pitfalls and opportunities and dangers of sexuality, I think is a very healthy thing. The mainstream religions, they don't do that. They really don't do that. I mean, for one, there's a ton of death denying, just denying that death is really death. And then of course there's the whole thing about sin and all that, and we won't really get into it, but it doesn't seem very reality based to me to start with. And I don't think it's very helpful for people on the other hand, because, you know, in order to really be here on planet Earth with both feet planted firmly, you have to confront the real, and the real includes those things. So here we are at this time of year, what we call the witching month. I mean, just in the time that I've been in paganism, 30 odd years, I have seen the Samhain season, the Hallows season, expand from the week of October to the month of October plus the first week of November.
Okay, so it's sort of like what Christmas has done in the secular world.
Yes.
Of its, because yeah. We love it so much.
But it's not only that we love it so much, it's also that there's a lot of work to do at this time of year. We have, you know, we have departed loved ones to grieve and remember. We have larger questions like the ones we're talking about today to grapple with. We have our own mortality to come to grips with, and we're going to be talking in a podcast soon about death and our relationship with death and what that all means. And, you know, that includes everything from, you know, the very theoretical, you know, how do I feel about the fact that I'm going to die questions, to the very practical, what do we do with bodies question. So I feel that although we are saddled with these terrible injustices and losses, we as pagans are also blessed that we are in traditions that grant us time and processes to come to grips with them.
Yeah. And that those are things that we can choose to cultivate in our lives and practice.
Yes, indeed so. And so maybe we should talk some about what some of those things are. We've talked about sitting with the grief, and we've talked about having a time of year to really come to grips with this. But let's talk a bit about rituals and practices and how those can fold into a way of living gracefully in the context of these losses and sorrows.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we go to rituals, which I think of as much more intentional moments, I want to pause at some larger lifestyle things that we can do during this time of year. Going back to the creating of context, and every family is different, but one of the things that we do is we put documentaries on in the evenings. Hmm. And what documentaries we put on are, one, they're followed by whatever we're interested in the moment, but also they do tend to have kind of follow the seasons a little bit. And that, so if you watch documentaries or listen to podcasts or listen to, I'm guessing some of you listen to podcasts, just a suspicion.
We hope you listen to podcasts.
or listen to books or whatever you do, that there is an opportunity to really curate what you're experiencing with the seasons, and that this is a time for learning about the, well, maybe not just your ancestors, but humans in general and the context of the earth and enjoying that larger context. And also what you may be bringing into your home as your visual cues. We've talked about this a lot on the podcast. Just recently, we've talked about pagan homes and the being natural history museums. But what is coming into your home? What are you seeing? What are you experiencing on a daily basis? I would invite folks to think about that on not just a what do you do on a ritual level, but what is your daily life? What are those little moments like?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, and there are ongoing practices around the course of the year as well that you can implement if you choose to, that can kind of help with some of this grief process. My focus, which is what I call my altar, mm-hmm. Is divided into two sections. I think I've mentioned this before. There's an upper section, which is the world and all the cool, amazing, fantastic things that I love about the world and memories and so forth. But then the shelf underneath that is the underworld. Mm-hmm. And that is about ancestors and about loss and grief. And so that's where the bones and skulls, and there's a sugar skull from Mexico, and pictures of my beloved dead, and surgical instruments that my mother had in her house when she died. She was a nurse. Mm. Stuff like that lives. And I also put fossils there. Mm. Fossils of the kinds of organisms that don't exist anymore, like ammonites, for example. I find that the recognition of those ancestors as well is a really important piece of my grappling with loss, death, and change. Because really at the end of all this, with the exception of the issues of injustice, when you're talking strictly about climate, what you're really talking about is the grief of change. Mm-hmm. The past is gone. Things aren't the way they used to be. And that's a hard pill for many of us humans to swallow. We like a stable situation. It helps us feel more secure. Our great evolutionary adaptation is the ability to project imaginary futures. Mm-hmm. And in unstable situations, we aren't able to do that very well, and it's frightening.
Yeah.
So I would encourage our listeners, if this is something that appeals to you, you know, set up an ancestry altar, an underworld that gives you an opportunity to work with your losses throughout the year, and also to come into more of a sense of being less grief-stricken about those changes that are happening.
Yeah. So saying that, let's circle back to where we were before we took our little detour and talk a little bit about ritual.
Sure. Contending with loss is a theme of pagan ritual that I have seen so much. It seems as though either loss or the desire to lose something, the desire for something to be taken away, like grief, mm-hmm. or anxiety or fear or depression or rage. I see so many, you know, pagans doing rituals where you burn something in a fire or where you bury it in the ground, all of those kinds of things. And they're very powerful, mm-hmm. very powerful rituals. They can be extraordinary. So I encourage people, it's interesting because both of those examples that I gave are corollaries to the kinds of funerary practices we have in our society. Mm. We tend to bury people or burn them. And that seems very apt to me, because when we grieve, what we do is we have a ritual called a funeral. And it helps us to come to grips with the fact that, yes, indeed, the person is really gone, and to remember them fondly, and at least in the funerals that I do, to remember that our life is temporary and precious, and that we need to grasp it with both hands and really experience it, really live it.
Yeah.
I know that other religious practices, they have stuff about resurrection and all that kind of stuff, but that's not really my jam.
Yeah. Now, I know this wasn't exactly what you were saying, but one of the things that came up for me when you're talking about it as a funeral practice is also, I don't want us to give up either, accepting that change is happening and that there are species being lost and that there are whole biomes crumbling is not the same. We're not saying throw your hands up, you can't do anything, but that there has to be some acceptance and peace to be able to then go forward and fight. Right, to be able to do something. And so please don't interpret us as saying give up. This is a how do you get to the place where you are functional to be able to then continue to be part of this world.
Yes. This is not about a palliative in order to make yourself feel better so you can trundle on through your life happily oblivious of forces and injustices that are all around us. That's not what we're talking about here. And I am an activist myself, and I am, you know, strongly invested in desired political outcomes, economic outcomes, and I am very vocal about all that stuff. So, Yucca, I think you make a very good point. Because especially in these times where we seem to just be bombarded by crisis after crisis and global pandemics and insane leadership and wildfires that stretch from Alaska to Honduras and hurricanes and flooding, hurricane flooding in New York City. Crazy things happening. It can be very easy to just sort of throw up your hands and say, well, I think I'm going to eat a lot more chocolate now and just sort of tune things out. But that's not our charge as people at this time, I believe. I believe we have a responsibility to stand up against injustice, to stand up for equality, to stand up against violence, to stand up against the economic systems that are stripping the world and are causing the kinds of harm that we're seeing now. Now, we're not going to see the reversal of climate change impacts in our lives. That's not going to happen because the world doesn't really work on those kinds of timescales. Human lives are really too short for us to be able to see a lot of the impact that we will have now if we're successful. But we absolutely must work to be successful. And the things that you can do range from your own individual actions around, what's my carbon footprint? And if I have to take a plane somewhere, maybe I will buy carbon credits that, plant trees in a forest or preserve forests from being cut down as timber in order to ensure that there's an offset to the carbon impact of my taking that plane flight. All of those kinds of considerations, being mindful about what our impacts are in the world. But then there's also policy advocacy. And I, for one, believe that paganism is inherently political. It's always been kind of minority and transgressive, and it's always been a truth teller in the face of more mainstream, not truth telling. Mm-hmm. And I feel that it is our role to speak up for what is right and just and fair and equitable and sustainable, and to do that in all the different ways we can. And that means voting, it means writing letters, it means talking to friends, it means communicating through whatever channels we have available. So that's my soapbox speech.
We've had a lot of people join us just recently in the last few episodes. That topic, the topic of the connection between political action and paganism, is actually one that we've done an entire episode on. So it was a few months back, but you can look back through the episode list if you want to listen to a whole section on that. So now there is something, Mark, that I want to go back to what you said about not seeing climate reversal. I caution against statements which are really, really broad like that. I think that there's a lot of damage that's been done, but I think that there's a tremendous amount of potential and areas where there's a lot of hope. And there'd have to be a lot of changes on many levels, from the individual to large policy. But there are ideas and ways that we could certainly do a lot, that we certainly could pull, much of the excess atmospheric carbon out of the air in a very short few decades were we to do particular activities. That yes. doesn't necessarily mean that we could get everybody on board to do that, but that I think that we are in a position, I personally come from a position of a lot of hope around that, despite the terrible things that we're seeing, despite this, knowing that, hey, especially when you start talking soil, there's a lot there's a lot that we can do as individuals and as communities, especially on the community level. That's one where sometimes getting the big, you know, getting stuff to happen at state and country and national levels can be a huge to overcome. But getting smaller communities that manage land, or, you know, that can be a lot. That can be a much easier process that can have tremendous impact.
Oh, I agree. I definitely agree. I'm comfortable myself with the idea that I'm not going to see the tanker turn mm-hmm. because it takes a tremendous amount of energy to overcome the inertia of the current system and see things start to move in a more beneficial direction. And so, you know, and of course I'm quite a bit older than you are too, so I've got less time.
But if we, may I suggest that if we continuously say the tanker can't turn?
Oh, I'm not saying that.
Okay. Then, well, that's true. I'm sorry. But I think that it is helpful to be cautious that what we say doesn't come off as the tanker can't churn, so that doesn't make it so that those who are listening lose hope because they hear it over and over again that it's hopeless.
Sure. I mean, hopelessness is depression. There's no functional difference between the state of hopelessness and the state of depression. Depression is a state where you don't feel like there's any point in bothering to do anything. And it's miserable and it's deeply disempowering. And it creates a feedback loop that turns into a fanciful lying to yourself kind of system. Because all information that comes forward to you that says, well, maybe you could do something, maybe there is some hope, that all gets rejected in the name of maintaining the hopelessness or the depression. So I don't advocate for that at all. I really don't. When it comes to culture, I mean, I believe that we are going to see some pretty radical changes in human existence mm-hmm. in the next 100, 200 years. And that could mean a big crash in population. It could mean the shattering of global economics into more local economics. As fossil fuels become rarer and rarer and we can't, you know, trundle goods all over the world. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of different possible things that could happen. And yet I personally feel like as pagans, we're also culture builders. Mm-hmm. And it honestly does not matter to me whether pagan values of equality and caring for the earth and mutual respect and responsibility promulgate into this culture and change it, or whether they end up just being a model that persists into whatever it is that happens over the course of the next couple of hundred years. Because I believe that communities can be stronger and more successful and happier built around those values. Mm-hmm. And so in the Ethiopagan community, for example, what I'm working to foster is a model of how we can be with one another. And leaving the question of whether that's going to catch fire and take over the world, kind of out of the formula.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. And I also, I want to see those things enter into our culture or the future cultures in a very meaningful way. I'd love to see it take the pagan label with it, but it's really not about the pagan label to me. It's about those values.
I agree.
Right.
I agree. And on some of the issues that we've been talking about, we can solve them right now.
Yeah.
We, you know, with adequate will, we can solve institutional racism and police violence. We can solve those things. We can solve them politically, and we can solve them culturally with the adequate will.
Yeah.
And it requires developing that will amongst people who benefit from the system as it is in its inequality, which is challenging, but it's not impossible. And, you know, just what we've seen since the murder of George Floyd, I think suggests that we're at an inflection point now where some real change can be and should be made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
oof.
Yeah.
Who would have thought in 2019 that this is what this year was going to be like?
I saw a very funny meme on Facebook, and it was some archangel, and he's talking to God, and okay, I programmed the calendar for 2020, and God says, "You mean the 2020s? No, I took all the events and I put them in 2020. Wait, no.
Yeah.
Somebody misunderstood. We got all the history for 10 years in this one.
Mm.
So I guess my message to our listeners at the end is, yes, grieve and process and sit with it. But then be of stout heart and know that change is possible. And go out there and make some.
Yeah.
You know, this is not an era for passive observers. It is not a time when people who care can be silent or can be without action. This is the time that we are the people we've been waiting for.
Yeah. This is one of those points when they're looking back in the history books where could have gone a very different way. And so we got to decide what way it's going.
Yes.
Right now.
Yes. Yes. And history will definitely judge us on how we respond to the challenges that are coming forward now. I don't think I need to explain to anybody how I think they ought to vote in this year's presidential election. You know, but along those lines, I would remind people that in 1938 in Germany, it could not possibly have looked as if things could ever get better again.
Yeah.
And they didn't for another 7 years. But it was only 7 years, and it took a war. It took tremendous suffering in order for things to start to change. And yet now we look at Germany and it is, you know, one of the most liberal democracies in the world. Not perfect by any means, because nowhere is, but it's not
very different.
It's not the way it was in 1938. So things can change quickly when there is political will. So where are we? Is that our podcast for this week?
I think that is. So
okay.
Thank you everyone for joining us for this. And we really always love hearing from you. So this was a topic that came in from our listenership. And if you have topics that you would like to hear us talk about, please let us know. And Mark, what is that email address?
That is thewonderpodcastqs@gmail.com. So thewonderpodcastqs@gmail.com. And we would love to hear from you. Thanks, everyone.